Views expressed on the following show may not be those of the guests, hosts, or WSPN. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless written approval is given. Now, the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and Lynn Goodness.
Hello, and welcome to Talk Saratoga. I'm your host, Rick Thompson. Lynn won't be with us this morning. He's had some more, family health issues, and sorry he won't be here because every time Sue's on, it seems that it's one of his favorite shows, and he never gets to be on with Sue.
He was here the last time.
He was?
He was.
Well, see, that's he's getting so old, he can't remember anymore. But good morning, Sue.
Good morning.
How are you?
I am doing well.
You're about a four-time-a-year regular. We try to get you in the season.
Yeah, it used to be long, more than that. We'll have to try to work on that.
Yeah,
again.
We'll work on that. Yeah. But you're so busy, you know? And now you're, the assistant director. So you still do a lot of traveling, though.
Because I do,
you
yes.
haven't lost any of your old position.
No, I have not.
So, we always like to have you on. And there's always something going on in cooperative extension. And there's a few things that I want to ask you first. And
okay.
then you can come up with some topics yourself. Agriculture, and I don't know if it still is, was the main industry of Saratoga County.
Correct.
But it seems that things are happening. They're changing. And I know this year they had postponed the day on the farm.
Our Sunday on the farm.
Sunday
yes,
on
did.
The farm, which was in going 14th, 15th year.
No, try something like 22.
Okay, I'm close. And but they will be back next year. Now, what's going on with that aspect of the industry that they had to pull back this year?
Well, it really was due to some positives because while our farm numbers may have decreased when it comes to things like our dairy farms, our farm numbers overall have not decreased. And actually, we were one of the bigger growing counties when it came to things like ornamentals and vegetables. Mm-hmm. But typically we do our Sunday on the farm on one of our larger dairy farms. June is dairy month, and that's kind of how we targeted in. But some of our bigger dairy farms are actually doing some more major construction projects this year amongst their farms, and it made it very difficult for us to really isolate someone who, isn't already having a lot of projects that are out there in order to come. So that's really the main reason. And it's really time for us to kind of think about our focus and refocus onto what kind of events we might want for the public rather than just one big day on the farm.
Sure. Well, I think it's important that the people realize our agricultural presence in Saratoga County and really over the country. I mean, we're blessed as a country that we can produce our own food.
Absolutely.
Where a lot of countries in the world can't do that.
That is correct.
And I think the more we learn about how hard our farmers work and, get some tips on growing their own gardens, and I'll get into that in a minute, benefits everybody.
Absolutely, yes. And there's a lot of growing. At one time, I think our Sunday on the farm really worked to really help us be that catalyst to educate a lot of the young, who you had coming to the farm with those who have, families had been to farms before. They wanted to teach their young. But we have a lot more schools who are now delving in their science programs to get back into agriculture, to make sure that agriculture is part of their key curriculum. Which really is, you know, a plus side, because that does mean that we're going to definitely have some better teachings about ag and what the value of ag is in the U.S. Within some of our local school systems that we really had grown away from. It used to be a big program in many of the schools. It dropped back a number of years ago. Lots of times because it was considered, you know, more extracurricular.
Right.
And what they're really trying to do now is build it back into their science curriculums and their science programs so that that teaching is there. Because, you know, as I said, you know, and I think I've said once before when I was on, I did a, you know, all those different schools have different days. And I was at a middle school once doing one of those career days. And, you know, when we were really talking about, you know, where do you get your milk from? You know, there were some kids in this eighth grade middle school, the last year of middle school, who had absolutely no idea what the process was. And I found that very scary because it was really more of a definite, more suburban-y type school. It wasn't like it was in the middle of the city. Mm-hmm. And so I was, you know, like just floored. And then we went into a very long explanation while we were there that kind of went into the delve of what the life on the farm was. And that really wasn't the career I was there to talk about.
Sure.
But it was one of those aspects that really, you know, helped to bring it home as far as, you know, we really do need to make sure that everybody really is aware of, you know, where the food on the table's coming from. Yeah. You know, rather than when you say, well, you know, where did you get that from? And they'll be like, you know, Hannaford Price Chopper.
They grow them in the back room. Why
not? Cumberland Farms. And I'm like, really?
You know? I'm glad.
And to have them even realize that Cumberland Farms really was started from
a
family dairy farm,
right,
that then grew into a convenience store business
today.
So, you know, it's you know, it's those kinds of things that, you know, people just don't necessarily click with and realize. And you know, it's nice to see that it's coming back, that we have educators in the system who are looking to bring this back into the curriculums.
Right. Well, I'm glad that it's being taught in the science part of school, because, you know, we're dumbing down our students today with the curriculum that they're taking. When you have children entering college and 70% of them need remedial math and English, we're in a sad state of affairs. And I was talking with someone who was a teacher. And, you know, she said, you know, not everybody's meant for college. And there are so many other areas that they could go into for careers that they would make good money on. And right away, I think of our BOCES programs, where mm-hmm. you learn a trade and you've got a job for life, because people only need tradespeople, whether they're plumbers, electricians, or whatever.
Right.
And I think they have a... if I'm not mistaken, they have a program, don't they?
They have a horticulture program.
Yes. But
which delves into, you know, all the various aspects, you know, and then they have a program that's just keyed totally into use of heavy equipment as well as the, you know, mechanics of that. Those are things that those are types of trades that are going to be around all the time.
Well, sure. And things that you need, let's say, in a farm, or if you have a tree farm or whatever. I mean, you're going to have to know.
There's so many types of farms. So when people think of a farm, very often they'll be like, okay, you know, so you're talking cows, you're talking dairy, and I'm not talking cows.
Right.
We have a very growing business in Saratoga County of, you know, goat herds and goat milk, which is really, you know, picking up,
yep.
You know. And then, of course, we've got a variety of different farms that are breeding horses, you know. So, you know, when we're talking farms, we're not just talking, you know, cows and milk. You know, we have so many farms. And then, as I said, you know, we have tremendous numbers of, you know, growing vegetable producers that are out there, mm-hmm. you know, and that's a whole nother avenue of farming. And many of these are also, you know, getting into some of the CSAs, the community supported ag businesses, mm-hmm. as well. We're starting to see those pick back up. And if you can really, you know, deem on how much interest there really is in just general gardening, you know, with our Pitney Meadows project here in Saratoga that we have, you know, they have a waiting list of people looking for community garden sites and need to build more gardens.
Sure.
Yeah, no, and this year they built more gardens than they had last year, mm-hmm. and they still have a waiting list of people waiting to, you know, do it. So, you know, gardening, definitely people are starting to think more about producing their own food and what it is that they really need to do along that avenue. And that is all part of so-called farming.
Right. Well, one of the things, you know, to get back to the science in school, a lot of the farms, it doesn't matter which one. I mean, you could go to a tree farm such as Bob's Trees, mm-hmm. or a cattle farm, a dairy farm, or a grower of corn and vegetables are computer-driven today. Whether it be the watering programming or the milking programming. So, I mean, there are areas where kids that are very good in computers can get a job and use their skills in the agricultural industry.
Correct.
And that's what I like to see, not to shove the agricultural industry aside and just concentrate on, oh, maybe, you know, using your computers for other areas of work, which is okay. Mm-hmm, I mean, that's mm-hmm. great, but make it known that you can apply that field to another yeah. industry.
That becomes a couple of sciences together, your computer science added into your ag science and what it is that you come up with. And in New York State, we have a program that's called Harvest New York. That has started probably, I'm going to be bad because I'm not going to really remember how many years ago we started this program. Probably only 4 years, maybe 5 years ago that this program began in New York. We don't have a Harvest New York specialist housed within our region, but we have people who still work with us. But within the Harvest New York program, we just hired a precision agriculturalist. Exactly what you're talking about. Has some background in ag, but background within that computer and technology phases. And so, you know, that's not just working with the precision ag that you're dealing with for your farm equipment, but also now the use of drones in mapping out land, looking for wet spots, looking to be able to figure out how to better manage your fertility from just, you know, flying a drone over a crop area. Mm-hmm. With precision ag, you can really pinpoint where your problems are, where fertilizer is needed and where things are not, just from, you know, little pieces of technology equipment without having to be, you know, trying to second guess what it is you're doing.
But you need that, you know, you need that part of it, the computer.
You need to have that
part
computer
of that
part
knowledge,
of it. Yes.
You know, and see, this is my problem, and it has been my whole life. You know, I come up with a great idea, but it's already been implemented 5 years ago, you know, and I don't know if I read it somewhere or if I just came up with it. You know, the mind's a wonderful thing if you know how to use it. But no, I hate to see industries fall apart because they get to be passé. It's hard work.
It is.
The ag industry. But it's very rewarding. And, you know, you can use your applied skills and be very much in demand. I mean,
absolutely.
You know.
And everybody used to think the ag was so bad because it's 365 days a year.
Yep.
But your whole key is your hiring process, is your additional labor.
Yep.
It doesn't have to be 365 days for you.
For you, right.
You know, you got to have good managers, you know, good people on your farm so that everybody gets a chance to have a couple of weeks off, you know,
exactly.
Here, there, and everywhere. And it's not difficult to do,
no.
You know, in that. You know, you can definitely do that. You know, so it's not like, oh, you can never leave the farm. You know, I happen to, you know, I grew up on a hobby farm. You know, and my dad did work outside of the farm because we had 7 kids, you know, in order to support everybody.
Sure.
But I never vacationed a day in my life until I was in, you know, late teens. At 17,
right.
I went with my mom on a vacation. you know, because we did not go away because it, we ran this hobby farm. We didn't have any managers.
Right.
We weren't in it for supporting the family off the farm, but yet we still had to be there all the time.
Oh, sure.
You know, but if you're really running your farm, then you're going to have additional workers and support, and you're going to be there. So it's not like it was for me growing up years ago.
Right.
The ag industry is very different today.
I think it's more co-op. Is it more co-op centered where there's more people helping out in different areas?
For certain types of agriculture, yes. For other types, no, it really isn't. It's okay. Still, you know, the way it was. But we have so many well-trained individuals. Our ag schools have a really good attendance at our ag schools. So we have a lot of well-trained, you know, individuals that we can choose from to bring to our farm to help manage things, you know, that you can entrust with the business so that you can actually get away.
Okay. staying on this thing before I get to a way of growing, I was looking up I'm very frustrated when I go to buy apples in the supermarket, and maybe that's the wrong place to buy them. Maybe still you should go to an apple farm, but number one, the prices have gotten so high, and number two, I cannot find my favorite apple anywhere, and I don't know if they had a problem. Braeburn apples, which is one of the top ones grown in New York State. Did they have problems with apple? It seemed like it was a good apple crop last year.
It was a fair to good apple crop last year. It wasn't the best apple crop we've had. Braeburn is a tougher apple to grow, and it is a lot more weather sensitive than some of our, you know, apple varieties are.
Okay.
So yielding last year on Braeburn in New York was a little lower than normal, but I'd say across the entire areas, you know, that, you know, you have to really think that really Michigan and Washington are, you know, are big competitors when it comes to, you know, fruits.
Sure.
It was also a very tough growing year there. So your supplies are definitely down in what it is that you have. And a lot of people aren't going to find any longer some of what they thought were some of their favorite apples because apple varieties keep changing. Growers keep trying to put in some newer varieties that are going to produce a little better, that are yielded on some tree stock that, you know, it holds up better to a variety of conditions. And so you're going to see that, you know, there are some varieties that are going to start waning out while newer varieties are coming in.
Okay.
So there's a lot of change that in the last 10 years, there's actually been quite a bit of change in various cropping that has been grown, and you may not find necessarily a lot of the apple that was your favorite apple. You'll see,
right.
I mean, nobody's going to get rid of all of them,
right?
But you're still not going to necessarily have the yield and quantities that you once had.
Well, they better start coming back with the Braeburn. There's going to be heck to pay at the apple farms.
Yeah. But as you mentioned, a lot of our growers do sell directly to supermarkets, and so they do direct packaging for markets.
Yeah.
So we can get a lot of local grown apples at supermarkets. But if you happen to live near an orchard and you someplace that you can pass by their farm stand, that of course really is going to be your best place to get it.
Yeah, and I do have to say that there was a movement in supermarkets to highlight local producers.
Absolutely.
When they buy their apples in, they'll tell what farm it was grown on, and either like in Vermont or you know, in our area here, or out west a little bit in Utica, Rome,
right.
and that kind of helps out too, knowing that we're supporting our growers in this region. But you know, and it may be it's 2018. Times change. Prices go up. They need more money for pest control, weed control. But, you know, you used to be able to get apples for $1.69, $1.99 a pound, and now we're paying.
But you have to think
paying...
your fuel cost is up.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Your equipment is up. The overhead is tremendous in growing. And people find that out when they just grow their own vegetable garden.
Oh,
and then they
definitely.
Realize, oh, my gosh, I guess going to the farm stand's not so bad. Yeah, no.
Well, I'll tell you, though. You know, like, I mean, I'm using apples as an example because I'm just starting to get back into eating them. And when we buy two apples and it's $4 and something, it kind of hits home that maybe I should plant an apple tree or two at home. But
you're not going to have the ability to keep those apples for any length of time when you plant them at home.
I know.
You're going to have immediate harvest, it's immediate use, and you're going to turn them into sauce or put them in the freezer for something else because you don't have the cooler facility that's going to be able to hold them
over
so that
months.
You could have an apple now. You know, so growing your own is great if, you know, when you're just looking for, you know, fresh use, here we are.
Sure.
But it's not, you will not have the capability, even if you were living in an older farmhouse and had a root cellar,
right.
You're still not going to have the capability to hold apples so that you could be eating your own apple today.
Sure. Well, and one of the ones that really surprises me, and they must be really hard to grow because they're a very good apple, but the Honeycrisp, I mean, we're talking $4 a pound.
Honeycrisp is extremely difficult to grow, and it is very sensitive to a lot of issues.
Really?
And it is, you know, from blossom to harvest, it is very, very difficult. And your input is definitely more.
Yeah.
And your tree cost for the tree is more.
Is more.
Because it's a very difficult tree to really be working with.
Yeah.
So in this area, we don't have as much Honeycrisp grown. That really is a very large crop for up in northern New York versus what we have here.
Okay.
Our temperatures aren't as good for it. It's a very sensitive crop. And so therefore you will never see the price on a Honeycrisp drop.
Drop, yeah. I mean, I can understand. I mean, look, if I have a business, I'm not going to keep my prices the same when costs go up. And I'm sure that's the same. And, you know, one of the things you had mentioned about having a garden and the prices in that, but, excuse me, vegetable prices have risen tremendously too. And it just seems that, you know, here we go with beef. I mean, the price goes up to astronomical prices where you really can't, you know, you cut it mostly out of your diet, not because of health reasons, but because of cost reasons. And, you know, everything else has stayed pretty much the same. I mean, you know, chicken prices haven't gone up. Of course, you can grow more chickens than you can cows probably. But is the cattle industry coming back? I know we had a problem with the Midwest not being able to grow the cattle or raise the cattle because of the dry conditions and that.
And we still have tremendous dry conditions out there.
Excuse me.
I mean, they're starting to regain some ground. You know, we really lost, I mean, you know, 4 years ago, we lost all the herds in Texas due to the dry conditions.
Sure.
Now, think about what's happened to them within the last 3 years. They have been inundated with flooding.
Right.
That does not bring back the cattle industry.
No.
No. You're going from one extreme to the next extreme of what it is you have. But in our Midwest, we still have a lot of drought type conditions. We don't have the kind of food. We really don't have the ranges that we can keep them on. And you can't just keep them all housed to then feed.
Right.
You know, so you really have to get them out on ranges. And we really just don't have as many viable ranges. So our ranchers are, you know, farming much less head than they used to farm.
Sure.
And so you are still running into, you know, you're not seeing that cost come down in any great quantity because
right.
Our weather conditions in the U.S. are definitely changing. As much as people may want to poo-poo the idea of climate change, we definitely have a lot of different things that are going on out there with our jet streams, which I know we talked about before.
Yeah.
But that has a full impact on all of this industry because, you know, everything from being able to put the cows on the range to be able to, you know, grow the tomato in your own garden.
Sure. Well, I know the jet stream has a lot to do with it. But, you know, I think one of the biggest causes of air pollution and, you know, cutting down on the sun coming in or the ozone layer are, you know, I read an article about volcanic eruptions. There are so many eruptions a day people don't know about.
Correct.
That throw this acid smoke in the air. And what that does is, I mean, it travels and it blocks out the sun's rays. Mm-hmm. And so not only is it a man-made thing, but nature plays a big part.
Oh, nature plays a huge role
in that.
In what goes on.
You know, and right now, I mean, we're seeing it in Hawaii. Then there was another unpredicted eruption. I can't remember where, but they didn't even know it was going to erupt. But it's throwing all this acid. You know, when it gets into the water, it just, you know, devastates things. So, yeah, I know the weather's changing. I know things are happening now that didn't happen. Plus, we go through 100-year cycles, which makes it tough on a lot of things. But, you know, I think we're going to have to learn to adapt because we can't.
That is the big key.
Continue to do things we did 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to take our public service break now. It's the bottom of the hour. And then when we come back, I want to talk about ways to grow and things. Okay, so we'll be right
Sounds
back
good.
After our public service breaks.
I don't believe it. My savings are gone. They're gone.
You're kidding.
Nope, they're gone. They're gone, gone.
Okay, all right. Think about it. Where did you have them last?
I remember I was home, then I took them, and then I spent them on that vacation to Aruba. Then I bought this miniature suit of armor I saw in the in-flight magazine.
And that's the last you saw of your savings?
Yes.
This is so weird.
I know, right?
Weird? Not really. Not saving now means no money later. You'd be surprised how quickly a little money from every paycheck can really add up. Put away a few bucks, feel like $1 million. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org.
The armor is cool, though. Oops. I think I broke its gauntlet.
You broke my favorite part.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. And
check out mine.
Some of America's bravest warriors are returning home wounded. Here's one of them.
My name is Norberto Lara. I served for 11 years in the United States Army. While I was on a combat patrol in Baqaba, Iraq, a rocket-propelled grenade took my arm off at the shoulder. When I came home, I felt alone. My family was around me, but I couldn't talk to them about what I'd seen and what I'd done. I remember just thinking, man, the way I am right now, I don't want to live. I was discharged from the Army, and I've been working with the Wounded Warrior Project since 2007. You don't have to be severely wounded to be with the Wounded Warrior Project. We do have a lot of guys that have post-traumatic stress disorder. Being able to share your story, I guess it kind of helps you wrap your mind around what did happen over there. Just because you have left the military doesn't mean your life is over. Because when these guys are coming home, I'm kind of leading and training them. Instead of for combat, I'm leading and training them to heal. If I come away with anything from Wounded Warrior Project, it's them giving my life back. My name is Norby, and yes, I do suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, but I'm okay.
Don't suffer in silence. Contact WoundedWarriorProject.org.
Okay, we're back and talking about the Wounded Warrior Project. I think we all know Flag Day is June 14th, but it's going to be celebrated today with a parade in Saratoga, and the Elks Club has sponsored the parade, I think, for 100 years. So, you know, it's a really neat parade. It's a long parade. If you expose your children to parades, because when I was a kid, there was a parade on every holiday.
Yeah.
4th of July, Flag Day, Labor Day, Veterans Day. And it doesn't for it doesn't seem that there's all that many today, although we still have parades. But, you know, the kids should see them and then they understand what they're for. And they have fun, too. So parade today in Saratoga, I think it starts probably at 11, somewhere around there, and it'll go on. Sue, I want to get back a little bit to growing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe you can explain what hydroponic growing is.
Okay.
You know, over planting in the
soil. Yeah, we have all kinds of hydroponic systems that are out there today. So this is a soilless planting. So you're growing in a medium. Typically, a very common medium that is used for hydroponic is rock wool. You know, because it absorbs your nutrients very, very well as it flows through the system. And the systems are set up so, you know, depending upon what you have, I mean, there's tower systems and then there's just regular bench type systems that you have for it. You can do it also within trough systems. So there's many, many different varieties of hydroponic growing, but you're growing within a liquid medium versus a soil. The chances of various types of diseases is lessened when you're growing in some of these types of mediums, and it's constant feed that's going through them. So you're getting more of a continual, you know, nutritional base into it, you know, because there's nothing there. So you have mm-hmm. to be constantly feeding. Where in soils, you have microorganisms that constantly are replenishing, you know, the nutrients within your soil. When you're sure. in this, you know, liquid, you know, environment, you need to be supplying that nutrition to the plant.
Now, when we say liquid, we're talking about water.
We're talking
correct?
Water.
Okay.
Water with various nutrient solutions that right. are going into it.
Okay. Now, so what can be grown hydroponically?
Basically, many, many things, you know, just about okay. anything that you can grow outside of an apple tree,
right.
we can grow nuts. In hydroponics.
Okay, well, there know. Goes.
But on. We can grow raspberries for hydroponically.
You can.
You know, you really have to have one of the basin, one of the large trough systems in order to do that, you know, but you could produce them that way. But you really want to grow hydroponically crops that are going to, you know, turn around faster. So it's okay. going to be things like, you know, tomatoes, all of your greens. You're not able to grow root crops hydroponically.
Okay.
So you're not going to get a carrot and a beet hydroponically.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
But you can grow, zucchini or?
Yep, peppers, zucchini, you know. Yep. Yep.
Okay.
You know, all of those other crops can be grown hydroponically. Your most common crops to really come out of hydroponics, though, are your green crops because you can turn them over so fast.
Right.
And that's whether we're talking our lettuces, mesquite, all of those types of things, sure. but also our herbs. Our herbs are really because people are using so much fresh herb
yes.
in products today, and, you know, and things that they're producing at home and dinners that they're making. And the fresh herbs, turning them over hydroponically is very good because we can actually grow, you know, we can grow fast, we can harvest, we can then reseed and regrow,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's not, you're not. While it may seem like there's some waste to it, there's probably less waste in the long run because you're really able to really harvest all and you're not, you know, you're not
right.
waiting for that regrowth cycle that you definitely, you know, have within some of your other environments.
Sure. I know a lot of restaurants that have some property have their own gardens and a lot, you know, probably half of the garden is dedicated to herbs.
Correct.
Tomatoes, because they produce, a tomato plant produces a lot of tomatoes, as you know, if someone has a tomato garden and they keep bringing you baskets of tomatoes, zucchini, and they're growing a lot, a lot of their own vegetables
yes,
and
they are.
Herbs because they're using more, like you said, more of the herbs in their cooking. And I think that's great that they can do that. But what size of an area would you need for hydroponic growing? I mean, obviously it has to be grown inside, correct?
Yeah, but you don't really need a big space for hydroponic growing. You just need to be able to come up with what it is you have, what system you want to do. You know, you could build yourself some towers. All you need is, a big bucket and some pumps, and you could build towers that you could then be pushing, it up through. You know, the towers that are out there in the marketplace are very expensive, but mm-hmm. and building your own would not be cheap either.
Right.
But still, you could do something in a very small amount of space. So you don't need to have a large area. I mean, you could do some hydroponics with some lighting and, a small space in your garage versus necessarily having to have, a greenhouse to do it in.
Sure. Or if you had a big backyard, you could put a small greenhouse.
Yeah, you can put small greenhouses up. You can do, so it's really going to depend upon what it is you're really trying to do as to, what you're looking for.
Sure.
We actually have some small hydroponic systems that some of the schools have actually done within classrooms
mm-hmm.
where you're just doing, a couple of small troughs just so you can see what the process really is. And if all you're looking for is something like some herbs and some lettuce, you could definitely do that. The big thing for most homeowners is that you would basically need to have, if you don't have a greenhouse setting, you'd need to have a space within a garage or a basement area that you could put the adequate lighting that would be needed. And today, with a lot of the LED light spectrum that is available out there for use, it's actually not difficult for you to supply that lighting.
Sure.
That's why we have what's now called vertical greenhouses. And what they really are they're rehabbing old warehouse areas and putting in hydroponic systems in these warehouses. They don't have any windows. It's just strictly on lighting. And they're doing those in a lot. New York City has them. You can find them out in Chicago. Indianapolis has a couple of big vertical farms. I mean, they're starting to pop up in many, many cities with these vertical farms that are out there as a reuse for some of that old industrial area that, just hasn't, had a comeback. And some of them aren't just doing hydroponics, but they're also doing aquaponics. So they're adding the fish to end of it as well. So they're growing, so they're utilizing the fish as part of that fertilization that's needed for, producing the crop.
Sure.
And then other ones are really doing aquaculture, where they're actually, then growing the fish indoors as well. So we have all kinds of different things that people can be, could be doing in spaces. Now for aquaculture, you can't do that in your garage.
Not unless you want to smell fishy.
You could do aquaponics in your garage where you're just using a small number of fish to help be that nutritional feed, for the project that you're working on as far as,
one of the...
Because fish emulsion, of course, is one of your biggest organic fertilizers.
Oh, sure. one of the, I think, positives of an area that doesn't have a lot of property that's very urbanized, this would really solve a big problem, taking over some of the... either in your backyard to grow some things yourself, or like you said, abandoning buildings because industry went out, and they could, somebody could take that and have a farmer's market.
Absolutely.
And, the city could benefit from it. And, you're not, like you said, I think one of the things, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're not introducing anything into the soil that could be harmful, because you have to use pesticides when you're growing just to keep some of the like tomato worms off. I mm-hmm, think seven mm-hmm. is one of the products that you use on tomato plants with the powder.
Correct.
To get rid of worms and that. And I don't think inside you'd have that problem.
Well, you still have some problems occasionally,
mm-hmm.
mainly fungal type issues versus the insect issues that you would have.
All right, we'll take this phone call. Good morning, caller.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
How are you?
Uncle Jack.
Yes.
Rick, I got a news talk for you this morning.
Okay.
I've been listening to your program for years, as you know.
Yeah.
And today's program is especially educational. Well done. She's an excellent speaker.
Oh, yeah.
And
she's great.
I think
Thank you
should devote a little time in your program to get more listeners.
Okay.
You're a college station, and you are getting people to understand some complex things. And get the listeners you have to solicit friends and other people to listen on Saturday morning and call in and contribute.
Well, one of the problems with that is with the statistics, we do have a large audience.
Yeah,
unlike people like you, they're afraid to call in because they don't like their voices heard over the air. Now, this isn't just here. It's a lot of stations have a tough time getting call-ins. Unless you're talking about subjects like politics or, you know, different subjects that really irritate people or get them excited and then they'll call in. But normally we find in informational shows or talking about, you know, businesses or that, they like to listen to the information and would rather not call in. But our analytics that we use show that we have a nice listening base.
Yeah.
But
I forget the lady's first name, but
this is Sue.
When she brought up the aquaponics,
yeah,
that was special information, I think.
Oh, definitely. And, I mean, you know, we have to learn to do things a little differently today. Although hydroponics has been around for a while, but you know, the way property's being taken over for development, and we have less and less property to use for big gardens. You know, sometimes we have to innovate, and I think do some different things. So,
well, it's very practical education, and I'm enjoying it.
Well, I'm glad you do.
I would like to see more people enjoy it.
Yeah, I do. Okay.
And love to the family.
And same down there. You take it easy. Okay.
You bet. Bye.
Bye-bye. And that's Uncle Jack from Florida. So, and I love his phone calls. So
that's wonderful.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. But, I mean, getting people to call is like pulling teeth.
Well,
it's
it is.
Tough.
It
but
is.
As long as they're listening and they enjoy it, I think they'd call up if they didn't enjoy the show and the information that we try and bring. But I mean, getting back to the hydroponics, I know I had a friend in the town of Glen,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, a lot of farm country back up in there. And he had a tomato farm. He inherited it from his grandfather, but he went hydroponic because it was easier to care for.
Absolutely.
And a lot less money in, you know, the pesticides and the farm equipment that he had to have.
Correct.
So for him, it worked out really well.
Yeah, that's the one nice thing. You don't have to have all the large tractors and all of that, so you're really cutting your costs there tremendously.
Sure.
Because tractors, of course, as anything mechanical, is going to break down. Not saying that your pump system's not going to break within your greenhouse either. You know, I mean, you are going to run into things, but you still aren't having that, you know, $100,000 investment in the piece of equipment that you're really trying to deal with. Instead, that money is put into that, and you can do it year-round. It's not something that, you know, it is seasonal like the rest of, you know, our like crapping outdoors is.
Right.
We're very seasonal.
Up here,
we have
sure.
a very, you know, we have a short season.
Yep.
You know, it's, you know, mid to late May into early September, and some years we can go further than that, but
sure.
still our average last frost date is still in September.
Yep.
We honestly still have an average last frost date of around September 15th for our area.
Okay.
So, I mean, we're not talking very late into September.
Sure.
Now, some years, yes, we can go into November without a frost. And other years, you know, we are frosted by, you know, Labor Day. So you just never know. But so that season is very, very short for us. With something like hydroponics, or, you know, you can actually extend that season because you're counting on what you have as indoor quality and you can, you know, bypass all of the problems of that, you know, chilling.
Well, and then too, I mean, as many things are, we're dependent on the weather. So if you get a rainy summer, I mean, things aren't going to grow that well because their roots could get damaged. And if it's too hot, you have to make sure that you're watering enough to
I mean, we've already experienced some of that this year. Not as bad as last year,
right.
But we were very rainy early on for a while.
And chilly.
You know, and crops were very much delayed. We were solidly coming into what we would call our season initially 2.5 weeks behind. We still are behind in our season, but we're not 2.5 weeks behind any longer. So you do play some catch up as you go. But, you know, we were extremely cold, extremely wet early in our season.
Yeah.
And that, you know, really curtails what's really going on out there.
Sure. No, I'm sure where Uncle Jack is down in Florida, they don't really have much. It was chillier.
They had a couple of severe frosts this year down in Florida. So it's not like they don't always get it. You know, I mean, it's not constantly for them. But when they have a year that's a bad year, you have to think about where some of your crops come from. California has had some really cold temperatures this year.
That's right.
You know, last weekend I was away with our National Junior Horticultural Kids. Two of our youth officers come out of California. When they left their place, we were in St. Louis, is where our convention will be in October. St. Louis was running 95, 97 degrees. They left home. It was 60 degrees at home in California.
Yeah,
it was warmer here in New York State than it was California. Yeah, no. So your temperature variations are tremendous that are out there.
And that's
Of course, they came from 60 degrees into, you know, the 97 degree days.
Right.
And they were like walked off the plane and said, oh, my gosh, let me go back home.
Into my bathing suit. You know? But
it was cold for them at 60.
Sure. But well, it's almost like going to Florida in February and you're on the beach in a bathing suit and you see the natives down there walking around with heavy sweaters on their jackets. I always, you know, get a chuckle out of that. But part of that problem too, is that the crops that you can only get from California, and I'm thinking like artichokes. There's one valley there that produces a lot of the artichokes that are sold in the country. Have had a bad seasons because of weather-wise for years, and that's why either they're not available in stores up here or the price is. I talk about artichokes. That was a staple when I was growing up, you know. I always thought that my grandmother read in the newspaper that artichokes 3 for $1 and that, you know, it was a cheap mafia hit or something. But, you know, artichokes, but back then they were cheap. But anyway, I had a bad humor. But, crops aren't producing that much, so we have to import. If you go to the grocery store now and you want to buy avocados, you look and see they're all incoming from Mexico.
Yeah,
because it's warmer down there, and
you get a lot of crop changes that do occur, you know, just because of that. And honestly, things like the citrus crop in Florida very much affected by those freezes that you have.
Sure.
You know, so it's, you know, it's. And there's not any great technology to help a lot of our, you know, tree fruits when it comes to trying to protect them from freezes. I mean, we have fans, we have smudge pots, you know, it all depends upon what part of the country, what crops you're trying to grow to try to keep things warmer. But when you really think about that, you know, how much regulation do you really get?
Right.
We can only change Mother Nature so much.
Sure.
So there is still definitely going to be an impact on the production, no matter what you're trying to do to curtail, you know, that frost from occurring. There's not, you know, and there's not much you can do when you're talking about the severe droughts you've had in California, because it's not just that Mother Nature isn't supplying the rain, but we don't have any additional water sources that are available to them because they've been in so many years of drought that they don't have the additional water. So they really can't irrigate. So just, you know, when you have a drought and people are like, oh, you know, water something. You can't water something,
right.
You know. There, if, when we have a drought here, usually we can We still have some, you know, some water source. Our water level isn't extremely low.
Right.
We have to curtail how much watering we do, but we don't have to really stop watering. And in California, with the several years of drought that they are faced with, they just don't have any water.
Well, they have a bad water problem.
And you think about the fact
anyway.
That same, you know, I mean, South Africa is going into the same thing. There's no water.
Right.
You know, and it just really, every location has its little, you know, quirks.
Yeah.
And ag has always been a very difficult industry to work with because you do count on Mother Nature so much for what it is that you're
right.
doing.
And as we know, water is the key of life. And if you don't have water, you don't have much of anything.
You need water and you need sun.
Yeah.
You know, because we need to keep the nutrients growing and we need the water to keep that, moisture level there.
Do you think it's time to have Father Nature step in and take over a little bit from Mother Nature?
I'm not sure Father Nature would be any better, you know?
I know. It's well, you know, as you said earlier on, adaptation is the key to everything.
That's the key. You just have to adapt to what it is you have.
Change some ways of thinking that has been going on since, you know, our, at least in our country here, you know, with the Indians and that, up through, I'd say probably the 60s. I think the 70s started to see a change towards changing weather, you know, try to plan on better ways to do things. And unfortunately, I think they were a little too late, like you say, in Texas with the cattle. That used to be one of the top cattle producers. You could go down to Texas and get a steak that cost $1.50.
Texas and probably. Colorado were always our big producers. We have tons. We have you know, cattle all across in the Midwest. But,
right.
you know, I mean, those were our great big producers. And both of them have suffered tremendously from problems.
Yeah.
And a lot of the problems in Colorado have been the extensive wildfires that have occurred within Colorado.
Well, and
that
California,
really had totally too. Impacts everything that's being done as far as cattle. So both of them have had some real extremes of things that have really, you know, impacted how things are. And it takes time to grow back from those extremes.
Sure.
You know, I mean, yes, it's coming back, but it takes time to really rebuild when you're dealing with all of those.
Hey, I want to talk a little bit. You know, we have about 7 minutes left, believe it
or
not.
Wow, it goes so fast.
Oh, it does. I'm telling you. I want to talk a little bit about 4-H.
Okay.
And 4-H is probably one of the better products that children can be involved in. Why don't you talk a little bit about 4-H?
Okay, so the 4-H program works with youth everywhere from age 5 on up to 19. You know, so we have various programming, and it's there's so many different programming aspects. You know, people used to think when they thought of 4-H, they would think cows and corn. You know, and it's hard to get away from that aspect with some, because that was inbred in so many people's minds for a period of time. But, you know, we have robotics teams, we have science teams, we have, you know, kids that are out there, you know, working in all kinds of different endeavors. Now, mind you, yes, we still do gardening, we still do raising of your animals. You know, but it's not, you don't have to have a big farm. We,
sure.
you know, we do, you know, projects with our, you know, pet projects. We have dog obedience. You know, we have nutrition projects. And we still try to instill in everybody all of that, you know, all your community service, your leadership development. We have our teen ambassadors that do all kinds of leadership programs. And they go out into the community to let people know what 4-H is all about. And these are the youth going out to speak to their peers, to let, you know, have them be involved in something. You know, it's... And we still instill, you know, the simple aspects of life as well. You know, how to cook, how to sew. Those are still options that are there. You know, those are things that you have to know. It's awful if you don't know how to sew on a button. You know, if you lose a button and you're like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I know people who do not know how to sew on a button. And I'm like, it's a very simple task.
It's sad.
You know, but these are things that we're not really necessarily learning any longer within our homing careers aspect in our school systems.
Sure.
Because now they've changed, and I don't even know what the title is anymore because my kids have been out of school for a little while now.
Core programs or whatever.
No. Yeah. So I'm not really sure what those, you know, what the title of that is. But these are things that are these lifelong learning skills, and that's really what 4-H is all about, is being able to have you work on your lifelong learning skills while doing things fun with people your age.
Right. One of the things, how is that program as far as attendance-wise over the years? Is it still holding steady, growing?
We're here in Saratoga County. We've been holding steady. I regret to say that a lot of our surrounding counties are not holding steady.
Okay.
You know, that they are going, you know, it is dipping. But we're holding steady. And last year we saw some growth.
Good.
And hopefully this year we'll see some growth again, you know, in our coming year. We're at the end, basically, of our what we would call our 4-H year.
Right.
We're getting ready to culminate that 4-H year with County Fair in July.
Yep.
You know, and that's where they get to then bring things they've been working on all year to show, be judged, you know. And there is a little monetary value from there as well.
Oh, yeah.
Luckily, we are supported nicely by the department. The fair itself is supported with, you know, some prizes for our 4-H'ers from the Department of Ag and Markets. And we're lucky that we have that. Not all states have that.
Sure.
And so it's nice in New York that we do have that. But, you know, so we have, you know, we just, it's a, so our big year starts back up in September. So if somebody's looking to really get involved, you can still call now. Leland Bunting is our educator who works with club management. And he's the one that you'd want to contact, and he can get you in started up with a club. Even though we're at the end of the year, you could still join them in now to talk about things. Sure. We're beyond our enrollment time because our enrollment time was the 1st of May.
Okay.
So we're beyond that time, but you would be able to, you know, still work with the club as they're finishing out their year to then restart with them fresh in September.
And the website of
www.ccesaratoga.org.
And you can do a search, Saratoga County.
Yeah, if you just did Cooperative Extension Saratoga, it's going to pop right up for you.
You know, it saddens me to hear that other areas 4-H is not up to par, and there has to be a way to, I don't know, to get in schools and talk about it. Now, you know, I mean, our Kiwanis Club, I'm involved in a service organization called Kiwanis, and in the past, up until the 80s, they used to have a program called the Farm and City Week, which was the week before Thanksgiving. And our club had a Farm and City night, which was the Thursday before Thanksgiving, where we would have someone from the agricultural field or a farmer or an apple grower or whatever be our guest speaker. Mm-hmm. And the object of that was to acquaint urban people who don't think about, you know, farming or growing. And here an interesting program on that. So you get to know how other people live and what they do to get that food that you had on your dinner, you know, to get that there. And, you know, we've gotten away from that, but we're talking about starting it up. But I think the more you have events like this, I think it's beneficial for our children because down the line they're going to need these knowledgeable things to...
Absolutely.
To survive and then pass down to their children. And because it used to be with home ec, I mean, you took home ec in high school and you learn these things and you can pass that on. And I don't know. I hate to see a program like that disappear in other areas. Here we're very lucky. We have a great network for 4-H, but, you know, we need to do it.
I really encourage people who come out to County Fair and realizing that County Fair is a week later this year than it had been. Don't ask me the exact dates. I should have them engraved in my mind, and I don't. You know, but it like starts somewhere around the 21st-ish, you know, in that vicinity.
Of June.
Yeah, no, of July.
Of July.
Of July.
Okay.
You know, but anybody who comes to the fair and you're not walking around the buildings, you're really missing something.
Yeah.
So definitely come to the fair. Go to the 4-H building. See what the youth are really heavily involved in. You will be extremely amazed by some of the projects that are there. And that would really encourage you to get your children involved in something that would really be, you know, very educational, along with being lots of fun for them.
My daughters are older now, but they still love going to the county fairs, seeing the 4-H, and then they love the sheep and the goats.
You definitely don't want to miss the animals, but everybody goes to the animals, and sometimes they waylay and bypass some of those other things. Yeah. I'd really encourage you to go to that 4-H building and look and see what the kids really do, because they really spend so much time doing things that are fun, that are interesting, and
they work hard.
And they really work hard at it, and you can see all of, you know, some of their, it's a minuscule amount of things that actually come to the fair in comparison to what they do throughout the year.
Sure. Well, Sue, I appreciate you coming.
Oh, well, thank you.
Unfortunately, the time goes by so fast.
It does. It flies.
You know, but we'll have you on again. You know that. And to everybody here, you have a great week. The weather's supposed to be really good.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah. And you know, get outside, get some sun, put some sun block on, though. And we'll be back next Saturday, so you take care.
Our show, we will we're going to continue. Yes, we got to continue. Hey, going out to the folks in Utica at the Rome Polish Home also. Yes, sirree. Here on our Polka Magic Saturday get-together, Jen dubbed it to you.